This is your gateway to the latest trends in the Gulf, bringing you exclusive insights and thought-provoking discussions. Welcome to AB Majlis, an Arabian business podcast. You can find our weekly episodes on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And for more exclusive content, subscribe to us on arabianbusiness.com. Welcome back to another episode of AB Majlis. I'm Tala Michelle Issa, your host for today and senior reporter at Arabian Business. In the studio with me today is Hazem Mulhem, CEO of EastNets, who's here with me today to discuss the UAE's recent removal from the Financial Action Task Force's grey list. But before that, he's going to share some insight on the reforms implemented and the effectiveness of anti-money laundering and counterterrorism financing efforts. But we'll also get into more detail about what it takes to get on the grey list and what it takes to get removed from it, and how money laundering transactions are going under the radar globally. So without further ado, Hazem, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
So could you maybe, first off, could you maybe briefly walk us through the work that you do at EastNets, and then we'll continue from there.
Yeah, myself, I am the founder and CEO of EastNets. We started EastNets back in 1984 as an entrepreneurial company, but the milestones that we have crossed since then were related to different times. So at the beginning, we were democratizing, you know, the computer awareness by having computers being sold through our entity in Jordan. Then in the 90s, we became a Swift business partner in the Middle East, where we created financial inclusion in 14 countries, and we put 450 banks on a Swift network. And then in the 2007, we became a software house where we started developing compliance software to combat financial terrorism and money laundering. Of course, the purpose of that, you know, to give tools for a safe and secure world. So this is what we do as a company, and this is what we have been doing since our inception.
Mm-hmm. So just to give our listeners maybe some background, how do criminals carry out money laundering and counterterrorism financing? If you could very broadly and briefly describe how these transactions work.
As a matter of fact, most of the global and cross-border transfers are done through the SWIFT network. The SWIFT network has almost 11,000 banks and financial institutes that are connected to the network. SWIFT acts as a hub and spoke through its center in Belgium and a parallel center in New Jersey. Having said that, most of the countries and most of the banks that are connected, 11,000 banks, they do transfer through the SWIFT hub. Naturally, the amount of the transfers that take place globally are almost quadrillion dollars. But with these quadrillion dollars, of course, there are some illicit money that is being also transferred, which is was an eye-opener for the United Nations because the amount is almost $2 trillion. And $2 trillion represents 2% of the global GDP. With that $2 trillion, this might represent a third economy after U.S. and China. Mm-hmm. And this is where globally, with the United Nations and, of course, most of the countries and the regulators, this is where the fight to combat illicit money is very important, because it helps economies and it helps the populations of these economies, you know, to thrive and to live in a better and a secure world.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to like the financial crime economy, would you say there's been an improvement in that over the last few years, generally speaking, this 2% of the world's GDP? Has it gone up or down?
As a matter of fact, it is there. We cannot say if it has gone up or down, but the challenge is that the criminals themselves also are technology savvy. And the criminals, they do use technology as well, because otherwise, you know, they could have been stopped long time ago. Mm-hmm. And this is where we are witnessing also continuously different various and forms, you know, of criminal activities in combat in financial terrorism and money laundering. And this is where the regulators and countries are working hand in glove. Of course, they're using RegTechs, they're using technology companies to combat this kind of financial terrorism. Of course, terrorists also, they resort to the dark web also because they share information amongst each other. They sell it to themselves. And this is where, you know, we witness sometimes there's a surge and sometimes there is a lower activity. If you notice the ransomware at some time, you know, it was going on a very high level and they did not stop short only, or they did not even address only financial industry. They addressed hospitals, energy, utilities, and this. And at one time, the ransomware was equal to $4 billion globally. So this is where, you know, to answer your question, whether it has gone up or down, these are two parallel tracks combating financial terrorism and money laundering, and at the same time, keeping an eye on the illicit activities that is being taken by the criminals themselves.
So we can't talk about money laundering or counterterrorism financing without, you know, the Financial Action Task Force. Now, could you walk us through it very briefly, like what they do, and then how do they categorize countries as gray or black or white? I think there's a white list, right? Or if I'm not
Yeah,
mistaken.
there are a couple of lists here, but the one I know about is the gray list because this is what attracts our attention mostly.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the FATF, which is the Financial Action Task Force, as I recall, it was founded by the OECD in Europe. And of course, lots of countries became participants in this task force because of its importance. Its importance because, you know, countries also, they want to safeguard their economies, they want to safeguard their population, and they want to be part of the financial map, of course, so they can be part of the global economy. And this is where this FATF, through their center in Paris, they cooperate with all regulators and governments to safeguard these economies. But of course, they keep an eye, you know, if there are any irregularities that are taking place in countries. And these irregularities usually because either there aren't enough regulations in a specific country, or there isn't enough, you know, monitoring to certain activities, or of course there is abuse. Because nowadays, if you notice, there are lots of fintechs who are dealing also with money. It's no more privy to the banks. It's no more privy to financial institutes. There are exchange houses. There are payment service providers. There are these small entities that are doing wallet providers, that they are doing transactions. And this is where, you know, things happen with these payment service providers or the fintechs. And this is where, you know, the FATF, they can see that there is sometimes financial terrorism. And this is where countries, they get black or gray listed. And of course, there are countries that they have an activity related to money laundering, and this is where they get gray listed. And having said that, they keep an eye on lots of countries. And of course, the countries, they start working with the FATF to meet the requirements that the FATF, they put per se for that country. And accordingly, they have to pass certain criteria, and then they get lifted out of the gray list.
The UAE was just removed off the grey list. I think it was maybe a month ago now. And through some interviews we've done here, in the obviously over the last few weeks, we've seen that the business community is obviously extremely happy. Fintechs are very happy. And yeah, so it's very interesting to see the journey the UAE's been on. But from your perspective, you probably know a lot more about the nitty-gritties of how this happened. But how did the UAE manage to pull itself out of the grey list? Like, what has it done in terms of reforms or regulations?
Yeah, of course, UAE, as we all know, has been for the last couple of years, or has become a financial center, and a very important financial center, because they have evolved in certain regulations and in certain business investments that could help investors come to this country. Of course, when the UAE was put on the grey list, the country has acted in a very efficient and speed of light matter, let me put it this way, because they have immediately have established an executive office to combat the financial tourism and money laundering. So that was a very important step. They have even established a court, so that all the cases that are related to the money laundering to be addressed there. They have even put all the regulatory requirements that are needed. And even these regulatory requirements that they have put, and the governance and the bylaws that they have worked on, it was not only by the executive office, because they have worked with all the parties. They have worked with the public entities, with the private entities, with direct tech, even with various offices in the country. And this, of course, helped them immediately meet the requirements. And of course, then they even put a penal code. So you can imagine, the huge work that they have to have. Has it been legal, or has it been executive, or has it been requirements so they can meet or tick the boxes so they can go out of the grey list? In addition to that, they have also worked, on what does it take from a technology point of view. So they have looked at the GoML, which is a platform by the United Nations, and they have created their own platform. So like this, all the entities, they can share the information that is related to financial crime. So I believe, in these 2 years, what UAE has done in order to get out of the grey list is something that is a huge effort and lots of work. And of course, this have helped them to get out of this grey list, because it is very important for a country that has become a destination for investment and a financial center not to be on such a list.
Normally, what are the implications of being on the grey list? How does that really sort of impact foreign investment and trade?
Yeah, first of all, let's say if we're going to talk about the trade, banks usually, when they do cross-border transfers, they need a correspondent banking, especially if they are doing it in dollars, or they need it in euros. And automatically, if a country is on the grey list, then the correspondent banking relationships get affected. Either they would require higher deposits, or they're not going to be doing business. So this will impact the trade. And a country like UAE, we are the trade is one of the important pillars, for the economy, plus the transfers. So this is the first thing from a banking aspect. Then the second one is related to investors. Investors would not come and invest in this country because they are worried that this country is grey listed, so this will impact their money, their reputation. Then the reputational damage, of course, that a country like UAE would get, because they will get downgraded, from the rating from a financial point of view, which is not good, to downgrade a country. And then, of course, the relationship with the international bodies like IMF, the World Bank, because, UAE is a contributor and works, with these entities globally. So, of course, this impacts not only the business sector, but also the economy. As we know, two pillars are very important in any economy. It is related to payments and related to trade. So you can imagine, we cannot have any payments in country, and we cannot have any trade, either import and export. So, it is a big challenge. So, of course, this is a huge impact. And this is where countries, the moment that they get themselves on the grey list, they work very hard to get out of it and meet all the requirements and keep a vigilant eye on it.
Yeah, I mean, for the UAE as well, luckily they have this ability to reform things very quickly, very, very quickly. Bring experts from all over the world, then they just start working on it, right? So,
yeah, actually, it is a phenomena, you know, in the UAE, because the leadership and the vision here, and all the entities in the country, they have the same understanding that, you know, they have to safeguard their country, especially, you know, that their motto, that they want to be an avant-garde country, they want to be ahead of everybody, they want to attract investments, they want to have a place that is, you know, looked at all the time, Mecca of investments, yeah, a financial center, especially after the hiccups that took place in Hong Kong and Singapore at the time.
Yeah.
So here it became an important center, and this is where, you know, everybody works very hard to do it in a shorter time and in the best and efficient way. Of course, they cooperate also with technology companies like ours, and because, you know, here we you know, UAE is one of the very early countries that they have an AI minister, for example.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, what does this mean for technology companies or regtechs or fintechs? Yeah, and this is where, you know, the contribution of technology companies with the regulators and with the country, because everything is there. So this gives them a tailwind, let's put it this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And some people are also saying that the UAE's exit from the grey list is setting an example for the rest of the region in terms of regulation when it comes to AML and CFT.
Of course, yes. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, a country like UAE, with all the work that they have done, it can be a place to look at, and sharing the information and benefiting out of the experience, it's an important thing. And this is where, you know, with this GoML platform that is out of the US, this is out of the United Nations, yeah, then every central bank, you know, they share the information and they learn about it. So UAE can be some, you know, a place to look at and to benefit out of their standardization.
Would you say, you know, in terms of regulation, would you say the UAE is ahead of the curve when it comes to the Gulf region? Like when you compare it to Saudi Arabia or Qatar or Bahrain?
No, actually, also Saudi Arabia, you know, they had some challenges earlier, and they got out of these challenges. So, you know, all, most of the area, they are being very vigilant, and they understand, you know, the challenges that they have. Because, you know, here, our economies in the Gulf area are based on payments and on trade.
Yes.
And these two, you know, pillars are very important to look at. So most of the countries in this region, they are being very vigilant and very careful to meet all the requirements from the FATF requirements. Recently, a couple of years ago, there was, it was actually during the COVID, they wanted to have the conference for FATF and Saudi Arabia, because they became a member, but it did not happen. They do it online. This part of the world, you know, there is a better cooperation, because, you know, we are part of ASEAN rather than the European part, you know, ASEAN, which is Asia.
Exactly. Mm. Interesting. And would you say there is anything else that the UAE maybe needs to continue to work on? Are there any areas of concern that it needs to maybe watch very closely?
You know, illicit money and money launderers, they continuously look for niches so they can have, you know, their flows working. So now, you know, the biggest challenge for the economies and for, you know, to combat financial terrorism is more or less related to the trade-based money laundering. Because with the trade-based money laundering, it is dependent sometimes on the country of origin, the destination, the vessel, the carrier, the geopolitics, even sometimes, you know, the overpricing or over-invoicing or under-invoicing. So there are lots of challenges in the value chain of the trade itself. Because, you know, can you imagine a ship going out of X port and going to Y port? And instead of going to Y port, it will go to V port. Yeah. And so, you know, if you don't have a proper vessel tracking and you have the geolocation, And if you don't have the workflow, and if you don't have the vessel being tracked, and if it's sanctioned or not sanctioned, and what kind of goods, then you know things happen. So this is where the trade-based monitoring now is becoming something that everybody has to keep an eye on. And now the value chain is big, and this is where you know countries that are working very hard, you know, on combating this kind of money laundering also that is taking place and now is popping up everywhere.
Yeah, definitely. You know, across the region, we've seen in the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain and Qatar that they're, you know, introducing instant payment systems as part of their broader strategy to drive digital adoption. And when we were chatting earlier before we started recording, you mentioned something very interesting about how instant payments were basically created for a specific audience. Could you get into that again? I think our listeners are going to find this very interesting.
Yeah, I believe that, you know, with the evolution of technology and, of course, the evolution of the users of technology, countries have to meet and the financial industry have to meet the requirements, of course, of their customers. Naturally, we are talking now about Generation Z. That is, of course, they don't have even the appetite or the time or the feel of going to a bricks and mortars institute that is a bank, yeah? And they are used, you know, in their daily life, you know, for a short span of attention. They are a TikTok user, they are an Instagram user. The maximum attention is 2 seconds because there's so much of information that they need to. Naturally, life is not only related to Instagram and TikTok. Of course, there are payments that are needed. There are restaurants to be paid to. There are invoices to be paid. Mm-hmm. And this is where, you know, all the financial industry is evolving also to meet, you know, the needs of this Generation Z and what are their needs. So this is where, you know, we are seeing a huge advancement in the payment systems.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where also instant payment is becoming a part and parcel of meeting the needs of this kind of generation, mm-hmm. number one. And of course, you know, to follow up with the technology itself. So instant payment is being regulated in lots of countries. We are talking about instant payments in Europe. The transfer should not take more than 2 seconds, you can imagine. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine the technology that is needed also to verify and to make sure that there isn't any black money that is being flowing within these 2 seconds. And of course, instant payments is being replicated in our part of the world. So we are seeing that instant payments is being regulated in our part of the world. And it is becoming a fact that we are witnessing in our daily life. Has it been with the Apple Pay or with different wallets or even, you know, with the payments now that we are seeing in UAE? You just enter the IBAN or you enter the iPhone and immediately the phone number and immediately the transfer is being done. So, of course, these instant payments that are taking place, it is to meet, you know, the huge base of people, which are the young people and who their needs, you know, are in sync with what is taking place, either from a government requirement or technology requirement or the offerings that is taking place from the financial industry.
Yeah.
Of course, on the back of it, there is a huge machinery to verify, to onboard, to make sure that the money is flowing properly, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I really want to get into the technology aspect of this, but I think it would be interesting to pick your brain about this. But I wonder, instant payments, does it kind of make it more difficult to prevent financial crime?
Yes and no. Of course, it is difficult because, you know, you need to have all the technology in place to make sure that if I am going to do a transaction in 2 seconds, I have to make sure that this transaction is verified. It is going to the right person. It is not going to a blacklisted entity or a person, and it is not being a money laundering and a fraud. So, of course, there is a huge technology behind this, and this is where it's an opportunity for all the RegTech and the FinTechs, you know, to meet all the requirements for these 2 seconds bracket. Of course, this is where AI comes in place. This is where machine learning comes in place. And this is where now, you know, we are seeing the advancement of AI that even any ordinary person can put any, with the chat GPT-4, you know, anybody can just put any text or, and immediately he can either get a code or get a music or a message or whatever. So this is where the AI now, even the advancement of AI is helping us to meet the challenges that can take place in the instant payment. But of course, we have to know that it's not only the good guys that are working on the technology, because exactly. there are others who are trying to find niches so they can abuse it.
Exactly. Yeah, there's people are saying criminals, the way we use AI every day, criminals are also using it to make their jobs easier.
So. Of course, with the deep fakes now, and if you've heard about the latest scandal about Swift, you know, and all that. Yeah, so.
There's a lot going on, unfortunately.
The finger, you know, the Swift. There was a scandal about the deep fakes recently.
Something was that the one in Hong Kong, the $200 million?
No. It's a different story. We'll talk about it later.
Okay, we'll talk about episode. It afterwards. So, you know, what's EastNet's doing in terms of, you know, compliance and payments tech? I think you're using AI, right, in some of your work?
Yes, we are applying, you know, artificial intelligence in most of our applications that are related to combat financial terrorism, because we want to reduce the false positives for our customers. Because when we're reducing the false positives, we are giving a chance, you know, to the banks, you know, to focus on other areas in their offerings to their customers. We are also using predictive analytics. So like this, the bankers, they can combat money laundering, so they can know where is the money flowing from an ultimate beneficiary owner. And of course, we are using machine learning so we can trace any anomaly that takes place in a fraudulent activity, if there is any fraudulent activity. So of course, we are using the latest technology, and at the same time, we are using blockchain to disseminate the information in a timely manner, especially the information that is coming from companies like Dow Jones, where they have the lists for the blacklisted societies and entities and people.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, this was some really, really interesting stuff. Hazem, thank you so much for joining us today. But before we end the episode, is there anything you'd like to add?
I would like to thank you, and of course, we all have to be vigilant as individuals, as entities, and even, you know, working with the public entities to see if there is any thing that is going wrong, because, you know, this does not even impact only the country, but it will impact even individuals at the end of the day. So this is where working all together and putting ideas to combat financial crime, it should be a target for all of us. So like this, we can have a better living and a better secure world for all of us.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Thank you so much, Hazem.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode, and thank you to all our subscribers. Sign up to arabianbusiness.com for all exclusive content.